Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. California Governor Jerry Brown just delivered his annual State of the State address. It was fairly short. He served as California's governor for a total of 11 years, so he's given a number of these speeches. He talked about California's comeback, in his words. He said a million new jobs have been created since 2010. There's a budgetary surplus in the billions, a minimum wage rising to $10 an hour. He briefly talked about our infrastructure, pensions, the drought, health care. And then he ended the speech by saying, yes, California is a leader in so many ways, but the dangers and difficulties we face can never be taken lightly. We still have too many struggling families, too much debt, and too many unknowns when it comes to our climate. Overcoming these challenges will test our vision, our discipline, and our ability to persevere. But overcome them, we will. As we do, we will build for the future, not steal from it. That's from California Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State this morning. So today on Your Call, we're going to open the lines to take your calls and questions about the current state of California. 38 million people live here. Our state is larger than most European countries. So how should we measure the overall health of such a massive state? Today, we're joined by Dan Walters. He's a columnist with the Sacramento Bee and an expert on California politics. He reported on Jerry Brown's first governorship back in the 70s. Dan is founding editor of the California Political Almanac and co-author of The Third House, Lobbyists, Money, and Power in Sacramento. And he joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Dan. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Brian Lubitz. He's publisher and editor of Calitix.com, a website focusing on local and state politics. Brian started Calitix in September of 2005 because of what he calls the lack of transparency in the State House. And Brian joins me here in studio. Hi, Brian. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And Sam Kang is general counsel of the Greenlining Institute, a nonprofit public policy organization that advocates for California's communities of color. He organizes Greenlining's multi-ethnic statewide coalition of community organizations, and he leads advocacy on statewide policy in Sacramento. And Sam is also in studio. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure's mine, Rose.
Great to have you. So, Dan, since you've been doing this longer than us, why don't we start off by...
I've been doing it longer than God.
Well, I didn't want to go there, but thank you. Why don't you start off by talking about, you know, in a state that is so massive, how do you judge the overall health of our state? Because, I mean, if you look at the Bay Area, you could say one thing. And if you look at the Central Valley, you can say something completely different.
Yes, it's a very uneven recovery from recession, very strong in coastal areas, particularly in the Bay Area, some areas of Southern California, and quite weak in the inland areas, particularly in the rural areas of California and some of the suburbs in Southern California. They're still seeing essentially recession, double-digit unemployment in many counties, and persistently so. And so you cannot really capture California in a phrase and say, California comeback. You can say, some of California is having a comeback. And to be accurate about it, the governor should have delineated that sort of thing rather than just making this kind of patting himself on the back and patting the legislature on the back and saying everything's hunky-dory. He should have acknowledged that it's a very uneven sort of situation, that there are serious economic and social problems, poverty. It's interesting to me that Neel Kashkari, who just announced this week he wants to run for governor, a Republican, came out in reaction to the speech and said he didn't mention poverty. Well, he kind of did, but just in passing. Isn't it odd that a Democratic governor wouldn't say something like that and a Republican candidate for governor would?
These are issues you really focus on, Sam. What are your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree more with Dan, actually, Rose. I think the nod that Dan was referring to is there was one sentence near the very end where the governor said there are too many struggling families, and that was his nod to what Dan called the uneven landscape of recovery happening here in California. Just to put some numbers to what that means, the U.S. Census Bureau came out with some numbers recently saying that California now leads the nation in terms of poverty rates in this country. Somewhere between 1 in 4 and 1 in 3 children in the in this state are in poverty. So these are issues that I very much agree that the governor just gave a tip of the cap at, which was actually quite surprised by that he didn't deal with this much further. I think the reason why he didn't have to, or maybe he felt like he didn't have to, was because, you know, this is an election year with no formidable challengers. So maybe he felt like he could just pad his talk about his resume and just move on.
Brian?
Well, you know, the one thing that I think is, if you compare this to D.C. and the federal issues, is that throughout the nation, we see these fights about income inequality with the 99% issues, and the entire nation is focused on how we get beyond the stark income inequality. I don't think this was addressed at all, but California, if you look at it, is one of the larger, you know, victims of this. We have the, you know, the irony of the Central Valley being one of the largest places of hunger while still being one of the breadbaskets of the country is obvious.
So how would you like to see him address this? Because there's a piece over at the Huffington Post called When Will Governor Brown Wage a War on Poverty? And it points out that according to the Supplemental Poverty Measure, which takes into account living expenses, unlike some of the other reports, California has the highest poverty rate in the nation. It's about 24%. So how would you like to see the governor address something like this, Sam?
Well, first of all, there needs to be an overall recognition that there is a problem here. I think that the governor glances over is that we don't have to dig with our knife anymore. The knife is done digging, but the wound is still open. From all the budget cuts that we've experienced now over the last 2 or 3 years before before we got in the black. One of the key ways to do that is to make sure we bulk up CalWORKs, because some of the things he was talking about in terms of getting increases on the books for CalWORKs, that was already decided upon last year.
And for those who aren't familiar with CalWORKs?
That is basically the program that we have to protect our unemployed and underemployed folks in this state. One of the glaring deficiencies that we haven't recovered from, where we cut into the bone, not just fat, is our health care access. Medi-Cal rates, reimbursement rates, these are the services that folks who are modest and low-income access in the state have not recovered. We got some of the lowest, if not the lowest, Medi-Cal reimbursement rates in the state. So that means fewer doctors, fewer nurses, fewer dentists, that folks who most need these services don't have access to. That's a place to start from, but the problems are vast and they are deep.
We did a show about this recently, actually, and I understand that the legislature wants to even bring down those reimbursement rates even more.
Yeah, and that's what's really surprising about this. And I think what the governor had the opportunity to do but didn't use his bully pulpit was to say, let's stop the bleeding. Because even though, like I said, the knife is done cutting, the wound is still open. That's why we're still bleeding.
Well, and Dan, can you put the budget in perspective for us? Because in the beginning of the speech, Governor Brown said, we've got a budgetary surplus in the billions. And the Democrats are really talking about that with pride. And then you hear the Republican pundits say, well, the Democrats can't spend this. Let's make sure they don't go to town and spend it. So how big of a deal is this budget surplus?
Well, if the governor is saying don't go spend it, he said that specifically today. He said don't overspend the surplus or we'll be back in deficit. Put it in context. Well, the state general fund budget is about a little over $100 billion. And it looks the numbers are changing virtually day by day, but basically going up. It looks like there is going into the budget season, so to speak, for a 14-15 year, the state is going to have maybe somewhere between $5 and $10 billion that are not now required to be spent by law. Now, that's when you talk about surpluses or deficits. That's what you look at. You look at what is the law now requiring you to spend, and what are your income, and then you're over or under. Well, it looks like we're going to be over by somewhere between $5 and $10 billion. So the question is then, should that money be spent? Now, the governor's budget would spend some of it, certainly. Should it be saved? He would save some of it. Should it be directed into some other purpose, or a new program or something? He doesn't really propose any new programs. So that's kind of the edge of the debate will be over what to do with that extra money, whether it should be spent or what. Now, the legislature seems to be kind of lining up behind the governor. We have to have a rainy day fund. And partially that's because I think in the past, when they've had these windfalls, they've tended to spend them, overspend them, and then they have deficits the following year and the following after that. So there's a big consciousness about that thing because, you know, it's like, you know, stop us from sinning again sort of thing. And that's what the governor says he wants to do. But there's a lot of pressure coming from the advocates for health care and the poor to spend more of it. Underlying all this is the question of whether spending this through the state budget is the best remedy for poverty, or whether, indeed, the state needs to look at it, economic development to create more jobs. We still have a very high unemployment rate in the state, one of the highest in the nation. To create more jobs, that we need to look at that end of the equation, not necessarily the welfare end of the equation, because in the long run, the state can't spend us out of poverty. There has to be something else going for it. We have to see a broader-based economic recovery that includes blue-collar jobs and so forth, and not just the techies in the Silicon Valley.
Brian?
Right. And I was going to say that was a great point about blue-collar job development, because many of the jobs and the unemployment is focused in Central Valley, where those folks are never going to be able to hold a tech job. As much as, you know, everyone you see around San Francisco will say, oh, you know, economy is great, and in fact it is in San Francisco. But, you know, you move outside the city, it's a big problem. Vocational programs, we need to increase spending there. Lieutenant Governor Newsom has been very focused on this. But then to the budget itself and the surplus, Senator Steinberg has proposed sort of a more balanced funding, which is one-third, 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 which is one-third to paying down debt, which is the governor's big item right now. And then also a third to spending, increasing spending on programs which are cut during the very lean times, and then another third towards a rainy day. You know, we have another 4 or so years with Prop 30 taxes, and by that time we should aim to have a strong rainy day fund, but we need to make sure we don't, that we also can reinvest in Californians too.
And sticking with the budget, because this is getting so much attention, Sam, can you talk a little bit about the budget cuts we have seen? Because it's easy to kind of move forward and say, great, there's a surplus, but a lot of people are suffering because of these cuts.
Sure, sure. I've talked about the cuts to health care that we've experienced. I think there were so many cuts that we've experienced, it's hard to just go over all of them. Let me just focus on one central point, though. It's in the California Budget Project, one of the most formidable think tanks in this state in terms of looking at any issue, but the budget specifically in this state, they focused on one issue specifically ahead of the governor's address this morning, and they said that child care and preschool spending is in dire need of being restored. They said that nearly 40% in recent years have been cut from preschool and child care funding. Now, why is this important? It's because kids who have a head start have just a higher likelihood, the propensity of them doing well further years, and then from that, succeeding and getting into higher education, having good jobs, well-paying jobs. It all starts early in life. And I bring that cut up specifically because if we don't invest in those folks who are going to be our workers in 15 to 20 years, we're going to eat our own seed corn. The great, I think, competitive advantage of California, if you talk economically, socioeconomically, is we've got great natural resources, beautiful parks and landscapes. But above all that, what really made this state great was our human capital and the innovation that came out of the diversity of people that are in this state. Looking at how we invest back into the people of California and looking specifically at restoring those cuts, I think is where we need to focus our attention.
That is Sam King. He's general counsel of the Greenlining Institute, a nonprofit public policy organization advocating for California's communities of color. Brian Lubitz is publisher and editor of Calitix, a website focusing on local and state politics. And Dan Walters is a columnist with the Sacramento Bee and author of The Third House, Lobbyists, Money, and Power in Sacramento. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about California Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State address. It was pretty short. He delivered it this morning. You can find the text at our website, yourcallradio.org. And we'd love to hear from you. If you heard his address, what did you think? What didn't he talk about that you would have liked to hear? And how do you judge the overall health of California? What is happening in your community? What changes have you seen? And then what changes would you like to see? I mean, the things that you're talking about, Sam, and I'll ask you about this in a few minutes, require money, right? So what about revenue? Where would that come from? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. 8255. What are your thoughts about the future of California? What should the priorities be? And what do you think about the governor's priorities? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Sam, what about that question, revenue?
Yeah, so I think what we need to realize, and I think the governor references this himself, he talked about in biblical analogies about, you know, 7 years of feast should not be enjoyed or not should be indulged upon because that'll usually follow 7 years of famine. And he actually references this exact analogy in his State of the State last year. It's almost exact copy and paste. I think that analogy really applies to the state of Prop 30. Prop 30 revenue stream is only a temporary solution. And I think it's being glossed over about, well, what happens after Prop 30? How do we go back to the voters, and what do we go back to them with? And I think it's not really a temporal solution. It's not a temporary solution that we have to go after. We need structural changes to revenue. I'll bring up one example, and that is reforming Prop 13 specifically. When that was passed back in the 1970s, I think there was a wide voter revolt against property taxes and how that was framed. And I think today, where Prop 13 is really missing its mark, is you have a lot of huge multinational corporations that the governor even referenced in his speech is doing quite well, raking record profits even during the Great Recession, but are only paying the property valuations of their properties in Silicon Valley that's valued in the 1970s or 1980s. If we just fix that structural problem, we could structurally fix the deficit and future volatility in the state.
Dan, you're in Sacramento. We know that politicians like Mark Leno and Tom Amiano would take up Prop 13, but is this something that politicians are talking about?
Oh, they talk about it all the time, but it's not going to happen. It would take a two-thirds vote of the legislature to change Proposition 13 or propose a change to Proposition 13. Now, there is a theory, untested, that you could make some changes in Proposition 13 having to do with changes of ownership reevaluation that would essentially perhaps raise taxes on business. But nobody's rushing to put that on the governor's desk, and if it were to go on the governor's desk, I think he would probably reject it.
Hmm.
He's made it very clear that he sees Proposition 30 as about all the tax increase that he has toleration for, and all these other things are kicking around, like changing Proposition 13 or an oil severance tax or something. He's just not interested in it. He's now become Jerry Brown, the guy who was Mr. Visionary when he was elected governor back in the 70s, has become stay the course, don't rock the boat, don't get wild and crazy, don't do anything rash. For someone like me who knew the old Jerry Brown, this is kind of a interesting evolution. Personally, it doesn't seem to have changed very much, but when it comes to politics and his what should be done in politics, he's definitely, I guess, mellowed or aged or matured or something, and he's just it's a status quo. I mean, as mentioned, he even recycled an old biblical quotation he had used before. There was absolutely nothing new in this speech at all. Not a scintilla.
What explains that, Dan? Do you still interview the governor on a regular basis?
Well, I don't know. Interview is exactly the word. We exchange words now and then. We know each other too well. We've spent so much time all over the country. Back when he was running for president all the time, we used to go out a lot. But I think it's just age. It's simply age. He's now the oldest governor in California history. He was once one of the youngest. Now he's the oldest. He's changed. He's evolved. He doesn't want to rock the boat. He's trying to build a legacy. He's trying to improve his standing in the history books vis-a-vis his first stint and vis-a-vis his father, who's kind of revered in the history books. And so he doesn't want to rock the boat. He wants to get rid of that Governor Moonbeam image once and for all and be Mr. Rock Solid, don't rock the boat, a steady hand at the tiller, you know, all those kind of trite phrases one might use, but that's how he sees himself now, the adult in the room, you know, keeping legislators from going, doing crazy things that he used to do, that sort of thing. The adult trying to warn your grandchildren not to do all the nutty things you did, and that's how he sees himself. It was interesting that when Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom introduced him, basically Gavin Newsom gave his own State of the State address in the introduction and kind of implied that, you know, we need some fresher ideas, some new ideas. And then Jerry Brown came back and immediately said, I appreciate change, but I also value continuity. It was kind of a, you know, up yours, Gavin. And I mean, you have to know the history. Basically, the Newsom family and the Brown families have been there intertwined for generations. And if you look at it in kind of the overall sense, Gavin Newsom is Jerry Brown's nephew, because Gavin Newsom's father was one of Jerry Brown's best friends, and his grandfather was one of Pat Brown's very best friends, and so forth. So you have to kind of put it in that context, but clearly it was, don't rock the boat, stay the course, and reelect me as governor, and I'll keep on doing the same thing I've been doing. There's nothing new under the sun. You know, that's the sort of thing.
And, you know, in many ways, that's kind of what the state needed after Governor Schwarzenegger, without all the volatility and drama that we had in the past, you know, in those 7 years. But, you know, I think Governor Brown I think Dan's exactly right on the point of he is sort of trying to build a solid legacy. So, you know, again, this adult reference. But, you know, I think there's so much more that we could be doing. I mean, there's so many more ways that he could be reaching out to build new programs and projects that don't necessarily have to spend a ton of money, but we can address some of the poverty issues that are addressing the state.
Well, let's hear from a caller before we go to break. Let's go to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
I wanted to comment on, I was disappointed that he didn't address any further what California budget's going to do in terms of its agreement to sign on to the Medicaid expansion and the problems that's going to involve fiscally, particularly with doctors, more and more doctors not accepting Medi-Cal because in California it's got the lowest reimbursement rate, one of the lowest in the country, and there was just no mention of health care costs and expenditures or anything in the budget about health care.
Well, thanks, Ruthann. We did a show about this about a month ago, about this very issue. And I mean, this is something you can't really dive into in the State of the State. But Dan, is this getting much attention in Sacramento? Because I mean, we're going to see a lot of new people and the system is going to be overtaxed.
It's not getting a lot of attention in Sacramento, actually. I mean, it gets one of those things that people kind of talk about. But I don't think there's going to be any intention to spend at least a lot of money on Medi-Cal reimbursement rates. I think the attitude towards Obamacare right now is, okay, we've done it, it's happening, let it happen, then we'll see whether they got any problems. You know, they're not going to anticipate that there are going to be shortages of doctors and whatnot. It's more of a, well, let's see how it happens, and then we'll worry about it later if we need to.
Well, we'll continue that discussion right after the break. Today, we are talking about California Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State. He just gave a short speech this morning. He focused on a number of issues, but really didn't dive deep into any one. He talked about the budget, jobs, minimum wage, pensions, health care, climate change, the drought. We'll definitely talk about that after the break. And we'd love to hear from you. If you heard the speech, what did you think? What do you think of Governor Jerry Brown's performance so far? And how do you judge the overall health of the state? What really strikes you about what's happening in your area? And what changes would you like to see? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. If you have a perspective that you'd like to share and join in today's conversation, or a question you feel needs to be answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or simply post a comment at yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 from the BBC, World Have Your Say. International peace talks to address Syria's civil war have opened in Montreux, Switzerland. with bitter exchanges between government and opposition representatives. On Your Call, pardon me, on World Have Your Say today, a roundup of what the talks are about. That's the BBC's World Have Your Say, coming up in 30 minutes.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about what it will take to end the slaughter of dolphins in Taiji, Japan. There's an annual slaughter of dolphins there. It begins in September and runs through March. And this week has been really bad. Over 200 dolphins have been killed so far. And now Ambassador to Japan Caroline Kennedy is tweeting about it. It's getting a lot of attention. Yoko Ono is now speaking out. So we'll find out what is really happening, why this is happening, and with so much attention, will the pressure have any effect? That's tomorrow. And then Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about California Governor Jerry Brown's state of the state and the overall health of California, population 38 million. This morning, Jerry Brown said a million new jobs have been created since 2010. There's a budgetary surplus. Minimum wage is rising to $10 an hour. He talked about infrastructure, pensions, health care, and the drought. So if you heard the speech, what did you think? And then just more generally, how do you judge the overall health of the state of California? What changes have you seen over the past few years? Where do you want the state to go? And what changes would you like to see? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Dan Walters, columnist with the Sacramento Bee and author of The Third House, Lobbyists, Money, and Power in Sacramento. Brian Lubitz is publisher and editor of Calitics.com, a website focusing on local and state politics. And Sam Kang is general counsel of the Green Lining Institute. They advocate for California's communities of color. And Sam, before we move off of Medi-Cal, because this is so important, you wanted to mention that the legislature is actually introducing all kinds of bills that, in your words, don't really make much sense.
Yeah, yeah. Dan pointed out before we went to commercial break that that the legislature is not really looking at this issue of primary care physician doctor shortages that are coming up because we just have such low Medi-Cal reimbursement rates. And instead of dealing with the problem head on and getting the rates to where they need to be, the legislators just trying to put things together with bubblegum and scotch tape. And I'll give you one example. Because of the shortage of doctors who are now accepting Medi-Cal rates to reimburse their services, there have been several bills that have been tried in this past legislative session where because there is a shortage of primary care doctors, you have other physicians who normally don't treat those services to provide that scope of practice. So, for example, an optometrist being a primary care physician because they went to medical school, nurses and nurses' assistants kind of blurring the lines about what they should be treating. And now, this is something that's not just concerning about what the shortage of doctors and primary care physicians are, but also as a patient, as a consumer of healthcare services, this is pretty alarming to me. So there is a definite problem that's being felt on the ground. So I couldn't agree more with the caller that called in from El Cerrito. I believe her name was Ruth Ann.
Right.
That this is a huge problem that's got to be dealt with.
Mm. Yeah, well, we'll definitely continue to cover this issue. So far, a million people in California have signed up for Obamacare, and we have the greatest number of uninsured residents because we're so big, but 7 million people are uninsured in California. So thank you for the call, Ruth Ann, and we will continue our coverage of Obamacare in the coming months. We've got a web comment from Mike. He says, the property tax is the most regressive tax because it has no relationship to the ability to pay. It made sense when one's property was one source of income, a ranch or a boarding house, for example, but not when we can tax income directly. Brian?
Well, you know, I mean, I think there's, you know, you have multiple levels, but we were built, because our tax code was built in a time when we had a consistent stream of revenue from the property tax, you know, we were set up that way. So I think the big problem is the inequality. So you have people who just bought a house last year, you know, starting couple, who are paying four or five times as much tax as their neighbor. So, you know, I don't think anybody would be particularly opposed to necessarily having an entire tax reform and having that discussion. But, you know, again, as Dan mentioned earlier, there's so many obstacles in Sacramento to actually getting that kind of grand reform on taxation.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Mike. And let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Andy in Redwood City. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say I wasn't impressed. I'm not impressed by the performance of the Democrats who have both the Assembly and the Senate. An October 19th article in the New York Times said 39 out of 40 bills deemed by the Chamber of Commerce to be job-killing bills were actually killed by the Democrats. And we need government-sponsored single-payer health care, not the Affordable Care Act. We need a higher minimum wage than the $10 the governor spoke about. We need 15, and we need to fix the commercial property tax breaks that were given when Proposition 13 was instituted. And we got to make sure that the corporations start paying into this state, into the tax coffers, which the corporations are not doing, and especially the huge break and the huge transition we've seen in personal property taxes versus commercial property taxes has got to go in the other direction. Thank you.
Well, you know, the one thing I think that sort of unites all those issues is campaign finance reform. So, unfortunately, because of the power of the Chamber of Commerce and other organizations like that, you know, many legislators, Democratic or Republican, can't go against a certain faction.
Well, elaborate on that a bit, because I wanted to ask you all, what changes have you seen when the Democrats got the supermajority in the legislature in 2012? I mean, if you could point to, you know, two big things, can you...
Right. Well, I mean, I think that became less important with the Proposition 25 a couple years ago, which made the budget a majority vote. You know, we did, the legislature didn't pass a two-thirds revenue measure. Instead, they went to the voters, which was a Governor Brown's pledge in 2010, which, you know, obviously passed, so maybe it was the right decision or not, but I think it's all a question of optics. But, you know, I think the Democrats are a little bit timid in terms of actually making those sort of big changes. You know, most of those are still constitutional questions would have to go to the ballot anyways. But yeah, I mean, I know there are some measures which are coming around, especially from our legislators in San Francisco, putting forth some of those big constitutional questions. You know, obviously Proposition 13, as Dan mentioned, would have to go to the ballot. But I think there's so much more we could do. But that being said, I think Governor Brown has taken the state from 2010 to now in a solid direction and in recovering the economy and the budget deficit.
Sam?
I think from what I've seen in Sacramento, just advocating up there to get bills passed for our communities, one thing that I was optimistic about is after, I think, was it Prop 26 that changed the term limits from that legislature can serve in one house, especially in the assembly, from 6 years to 12 years, I was hopeful that we get a legislature that'd be much more forward-thinking and long-term thinking and be thoughtful about policy. And I think from what I've seen, mostly is given that indication, but I didn't expect the extreme caution that I thought that's followed this new class of legislators who are going to be in the House for 10 to 12 years at a time. And I think a lot of that has been because of the tone setting by this governor. Really not just, I wouldn't even call it fiscal prudence, I would call it in many cases fiscal conservatism. Given that how many people are suffering and how many more folks are on or can be classified as being in poverty, I think it was actually the governor maybe the holding this legislature back from actually doing and asserting the muscle that it actually had, given that it had a two-thirds majority in both houses.
How exactly?
Well, I think Dan mentioned this specifically before, is it seems like Jerry in a lot of ways is chasing a ghost. Right, he's chasing the ghost of his father, who reigned over the golden years of California, the master plan, the investment of heavy of the infrastructure as we know it here in California, and a lot of things that the governor is trying to do is while he preaches fiscal prudence. Besides that, he has a couple of multi-billion-dollar infrastructure projects that are the okay exceptions to that rule, and. That inconsistency, I think, has not been pointed out by the checks and balances of the legislature that could easily say, why can't we spend just a fraction of that just to improve our own constituencies who are suffering?
Well, since you do lobby in Sacramento on a regular basis, Sam, what other insights can you give to those of us who don't spend that much time there and don't really know the ins and outs of Sacramento politics.
Well, I think voting constituencies actually have a good instinct as to actually what goes on in Sacramento. Things happen slowly. The legislature is not in our representative democracy is not organized in a way to move things quickly. So legislation is incremental. Things take steps. The caller that called in earlier about we need to move quicker and do things that are urgent, I couldn't agree more. He brought up specifically the policy that's really the best for this state and for this country, a single-payer healthcare system. I think we need to continue to push that, because if we didn't continue to push that, that might not be a possibility, at least further down the line, and it may not be a motivational factor to make at least cover California Obamacare work. So there's a lot of things that are factoring into making sure legislation works. It is incremental, but it's driven by big ideas. And what I hope and what I expect from this legislator, I hope, even in election year, is continue to push the big ideas, because that's where progress comes from.
And when you say push, in terms of citizen action, what is most effective? Dan, you're in Sacramento. I mean, there are lots of actions and protests and things happening that don't get much coverage, but they do happen. What is most effective?
Probably not marching around the Capitol. It's not probably the most effective thing. Look, affecting public policy is a very difficult thing to do. In a state as complicated, as diverse, and as large as California, every action has a reaction. Every issue has multiple stakeholders and multiple viewpoints. And it's extremely difficult to achieve any kind of a social consensus, much less a political consensus, to change policy in any dramatic fashion. And it takes huge amounts of effort. But the one constant theme, if you look at Sacramento politics, is money. Not just campaign money, although that gets a lot of attention. But the fact is that the decisions that are made in the legislature and by the governor and by other elected officials in California do have economic consequences. I did some calculations once for a book. I figured that directly they control about $500 billion a year. Not only the state budget, but federal funds and insurance premiums and utility rates and on and on and on. It adds up to a lot of money. And because it's a lot of money, and because even a tiny change in policy affects a lot of money, then there is a great impetus for people who are affected by that to influence politics. The big money then spawns little money and campaign money. That doesn't sound like little money. Maybe they spend $250 million a year on political action in California over a two-year cycle on lobbying fees and campaign contributions. But compared to the billions and billions and billions of dollars at stake in that decision-making, it's pretty small potatoes. And to affect policy in California, you have to take that into account. You have to understand that the decisions that are made have economic consequences for a lot of stakeholders, and you have to then deal with those stakeholders. You cannot just deal with the legislature. You have to deal with the stakeholders to stand behind every issue on all sides of an issue to try to achieve some sort of consensus. It's difficult, it's tedious work, and demonstrations outside the Capitol might get you on TV news, but they really don't affect anything.
So what does affect anything? I mean, you talked about the stakeholders.
You have to become a stakeholder. You have to get a seat at the table. You have to be there and have some political power or financial power to bring to bear on the issue itself. I wrote a book about lobbying about 15 years ago with a retired lobbyist. And the point we tried to make in that book is that it's a very complex process. It doesn't involve just one thing or just that thing. It's a very complex process to affect decision-making in the Capitol. You have to go out and find strategic allies, make common cause. I mean, let me give you just one tiny example of that. There's a proposal kicking around the legislature to change the law that Jerry Brown signed in 1975 having to do with a $250,000 cap on pain and suffering injuries in medical malpractice cases. It's been there for 38, 39 years now. And the people, the trial lawyers and a lot of groups say, you got to change that. You got to change that cap. The cap is too there. It's too rigid. It's never been changed in 39 years. But what happens is that the people who would be affected on at the other end, the medical care providers who would be paying presumably higher insurance premiums or something because of, if any change, they go out and create strategic allies. That's why you saw a letter to the editor in the Sacramento Bee the other day from Planned Parenthood said, don't make this change because it will raise our medical malpractice rates. Those are the people that, so they make a strategic ally in the, out of Planned Parenthood, and that resonates with the legislature. It's one thing for the insurance lobby to say, don't do it. It's another thing if Planned Parenthood or the clinic serving the poor get up and say, don't make this change. Hmm. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very complex process.
And, Brian, I mean, you started Calitics because of a lack of transparency in the State House. When you look at special interests, who really does have a seat at the table? Which industry is giving the most money and has the most influence in Sacramento?
Right. Well, I mean, as was mentioned earlier, I think the Chamber of Commerce, if you look at their record, it's hard to dispute that their job killer, your top 10 job killer bill every year, almost all of them are killed. So, I mean, I think it's hard to argue their success rate, even in a state like California, which is dominated by Democrats. I think if you go down the line, look at some of the other, sort of coalitions ranging from, the Chamber of Commerce down to environmentalists who are, marginally less successful because, despite the fact that it is a Democratic-dominated legislature, there's still, it's a very big haul to get environmental legislation passed in the state. So, I think there's a broad swath, but I think you're seeing an increasing lobbying presence from tech companies now, especially, here in San Francisco, you have some of the largest tech companies in the world, and now they're starting to realize that, oh, hey, look at this, we actually are involved in our state, so maybe we should, take a look there. So I think we'll see more and more of that, throughout the next year or two, and I think it's not going to slow down unless we do something affirmatively to change it.
What is the status of campaign finance reform in California?
Not going anywhere quickly. there was talk of a measure for 2014 Secretary of State race, which never happened, for public financing. So, I think there's a long road to go on that, and I think you still, to get real reform, I think you need constitutional amendment reform at the federal level.
That is Brian Lubitz, publisher and editor of Calitics.com, a site focusing on local and state politics. Dan Walters is a columnist with the Sacramento Bee and author of The Third House, Lobbyists, Money, and Power in Sacramento. And Sam King is general counsel of the Greenlining Institute. They advocate for California's communities of color. And today we're talking about Governor Jerry Brown's annual State of the State address. If you heard it, we'd love to hear from you. What did you think? How do you judge the overall health of the state of California? What do you see in your community? What changes would you like to see? And then also, I mean, what are your thoughts about what happens in Sacramento, especially with the Democratic majority taking over in 2012? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So I want to also talk about the drought. I was surprised to hear that House Speaker John Boehner is in the Central Valley, joining three Republican colleagues to propose emergency legislation aimed at drought relief. Willits right now has 100 days of water left. And Jerry Brown mentioned it briefly, but he has called an official drought in the state. So, Dan, and a lot of meteorologists say if we're lucky, we might get rain at the end of the month. But, I mean, it's like summer in San Francisco right now.
Yeah, we've seen it before. In fact, Jerry Brown had a very severe drought during the second year of his governorship, the 76-77 era. And it happens periodically in California. And it's one of those things. What we call normal is an arithmetic average. And that means it's going to be a lot more some years, a lot less other years. And that's the way it is. And Jerry Brown pointed that out in his speech, as a matter of fact. You cannot control the weather. All you can do is to try to buffer yourself against its effects. Now, one of the ways you could do that would be to build more reservoirs, more storage of water, so that when we got into these dry periods, we would have more water supply. But that is very controversial unto itself. It's been kicking, more storage has been kicking around Sacramento for probably 30 years, and nothing's happened on that front as well. And so this is another example of that glacial policy apparatus. It's very difficult to affect change in Sacramento. The governor mentioned storage in his speech. However, he did not mention what it would take to get that storage, which is probably a new water bond. He didn't even mention the water bond. He doesn't want a water bond on the ballot this year. It's very evident, because he wants to run for re-election as the man who is paying down debt, not running up more debt. So he doesn't want a water bond on the ballot this year. He doesn't want a school bond on the ballot this year for the same reason. And yet he has to at least appear to be addressing the drought. And so he does that in his speech. I mean, he pays homage to it. He says we have to do something about it. But he says that about a lot of issues. He says that about poverty. He says that about pension debt. He says that about we got to do something about it. But he doesn't offer anything that's concrete to do anything about it.
I think going forward, I think storage is obviously a big question, as Dan mentioned. The governor is focusing on the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which is very controversial, especially around the Delta, because it would involve possibly leaving the agriculture there. And I think it's, many people frame it as an agricultural versus environmental. And I think that's kind of misleading, mm-hmm. because what you have is two different agricultural groups in one corner. So you have, the Delta farmers versus the Central Valley farmers. Then you also have environmentalists and you have fishermen natural resources. So you're playing, chess on 18 different levels. Storage is just one aspect of it. And I think we need to do more and plan strategically to decrease our usage and increase conservation while we'll still have the resources now and plan for the long term when climate change, not if, but when climate change hits us.
Yeah, this actually came up on our show when we did the drought show, and we're definitely going to focus on agriculture because I think there are a lot of misconceptions and questions about how it actually works and who actually uses the most water. And you wanted to jump in there, Sam?
Yeah, Ruth. Rose, I think that Brian is hitting on exactly why the governor is choosing to gloss over this issue. He named, just in the span of 3 seconds, the many stakeholders that would be involved just by mentioning the words water bond coming out of the governor's mouth. And I think the reason why, that just spells out why the governor is choosing to avoid this issue, because up to this point in time, in his current term as governor, he's kept the game plan relatively simple, right? Is to make sure we make up the deficit, make sure we spend wisely, be fiscally prudent, and that's a very simple game plan. And I think the water drought, I think, is something that really mucks with trying to keep a simple game plan together. But he may not have a choice but to deal with it because the drought is ongoing.
Well, and Katie in Oakland just called in. And sorry, Katie, we're almost out of time. But she wanted to say we can't address the drought without addressing climate change. And we often say that California is a leader in this issue, Brian. How would you, what record or what grade would you give the state on climate change at this point?
Well, in terms of the other states, if you look at all 50 states, it's hard to argue that California is anything but the leader. If you look at AB 32 and the potential cap and trade program, and part of that is one of the big questions in Sacramento right now is how the governor plans on funding high-speed rail, which would be an enormous boon for transportation and development and economic growth. But the question is, can we afford to pay for it and pay back the federal government, who they've already paid for it? So, we could do a lot more on climate change. That's clear. How we address that while also maintaining the governor's, stated path of fiscal conservatism is a very open question at this point.
This conversation reminds me of one we had recently about the Atlas of California by Dick Walker and Suresh Lodha. And they say that California is at a crossroads. And they also say that when you look at things like unemployment, just the level, the jobs that are being created, low wages, poverty, homelessness, California is no better than Texas. And they said, I'm sure a lot of people's eyebrows would raise. But if you look at the numbers, it's actually pretty similar. And Sam, do you agree with that?
I absolutely do agree with it. I think, what really just is very ironic for me is that we all recognize there's a problem right now with the state of our weather, right? We recognize we're in a drought, even though explicitly we've been getting what we see just as beautiful sunny days, but we know there's a problem. And I think that's really reflective of how we regard our public infrastructure and our social services. Our budget is in a great state. There's sunny days, there's a budget surplus, but our challenges are hiding in plain sight. Despite the state of our public budget, even though we're rejoicing the fact that we're in the black and there's sunny days in terms of the fiscal prudence of our state budget, there are real problems of a quarter of all Californians being in poverty. And I think we just need to do a better job of recognizing all the challenges that are heading in plain sight. We did that with in terms of what we're dealing with, the drought, climate change, and weather. It's time to look at our people the same way.
And Dan, final thoughts from you in terms of California's at a crossroads. Where is it going?
Well, that's a good question. It seems like California is perpetually at a crossroads of one kind or another. I do think that while governance in Sacramento has perhaps improved, or maybe just perception of improvement in the last couple of years, I think we do have a difficult problem governing ourselves. As I mentioned earlier, in a state as complex and as large as California, you have so many stakeholders on so many issues. And generally what happens on those issues is they just battle to a draw. People on one side battle the people on the other side, and they wind up in the air with nothing change, no change at all on that issue. And water is actually a very good example of that. The governor got burned very badly 30 years ago when he proposed a peripheral canal around the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and only to be handed his hat by a referendum sponsored, incidentally, by a strange bedfellows alliance of environmentalists and farmers. And he's very leery about that, but he's pushing ahead with a new version of that called the Twin Tunnels. But he barely mentioned it in passing in today's speech because it's not particularly popular with voters. Same thing with his bullet train that he wants to be his legacy. Same thing, just virtually ignored it. And if it's because it's unpopular with voters. So he's very much oriented towards getting himself reelected. Don't rock the boat. Don't make any new waves. Don't propose anything new. Don't get the troops stirred up. Don't get the natives restless. Get me reelected so that I can finish out my fourth term as governor and maybe go into the history books better. But that's not governing. That's just kind of maintaining the status quo when you think about it.
Dan Walters is a columnist with the Sacramento Bee. Brian Lubitz is publisher with Calitix.com. And Sam Kang is general counsel of the Green Lighting Institute. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.